simply ask Play WGTD HD2 on TuneIn.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenny Aquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Len Iquinta for Community. Our topic today is morality, ethics, and prudence meet COVID-19. With me this morning are three expert guests who have thought a lot about this topic. Pastor Susan Patterson Sumwalt of First United Methodist Church, Pastor Jonathan Barker of Grace Lutheran Church, both of them in Kenosha, and Associate Professor Christopher Hudspeth, who teaches philosophy at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. His areas of expertise are ethics and moral psychology. Good morning, folks.
Morning.
Good morning, morning, Len.
Now, I want to mention that Pastor Barker has his first book out. It's currently available on Amazon, and it's called Jesus Would Demand a Green New Deal, The Story of Why One Christian Pastor Went on a 12-Day Fast for a Green New Deal. We're not going to be talking specifically about that topic, but I'm reading the book and I recommend it. It's a great read. Now, the coronavirus, COVID-19, our contemporary plague, has exploded upon our way of life. Just about every activity has been affected. I've assembled this panel of experts on philosophy, ethics, and morality to discuss the topics that scratch our consciences. If one cares about one's behaviors in relation to others, many questions arise. This disease is often hidden from those that are carrying it as they infect those around them. We know it apparently can be benign. We know it can kill. Medical experts and epidemiologists have scientifically reached some understanding of this plague, but they readily say there is much more they don't know about it. We significantly don't know what the lasting effects of mild to severe cases will be. We do know that there are no effective early treatments, no cure, no vaccine. We don't even know when there will be. We do know that experts think COVID-19 will eventually infect 60 to 70% of the population. And we know that masking and distancing can greatly reduce the risk of transmission if everyone does it. So, panel, let's begin by asking each of you to state a choice, a behavior, a compelling form of action that you think is an important moral or ethical issue that we each face. Professor Hudspeth, why don't you begin?
Well, first, thanks for having me. And now let me apologize. You asked for one thing, and I'm going to give you two. the recent pandemic has revealed two things that we as a nation must wrestle with. Recognizing these things is a moral imperative. First, no matter what we think about the importance of the individual in ethics, certain ethical and moral choices cannot be made from the individualistic, self-interested perspective. Some choices must be made from the utilitarian perspective. In our modern society, none of us are so radically independent as to be able to claim that our choices and actions affect no others. We probably never were that independent. And second, this pandemic has revealed in the starkest terms possible the inequity inherent in modern America. We can no longer ignore that liberty and justice for all fails to be true for all Americans.
Well, that gives us something to think about. Pastor Susan Patterson, somewhat, why don't you pick up the thread? What's on the top of your mind?
Yes, and it really flows, I think, from what the professor was just speaking about. When you asked us to think about one thing, it really comes out of our Christian tradition of being able to think about our neighbor as ourself, and our neighbor not as someone that is someone who lives right next door to us or a relative or someone that we know by name, but of all persons in our community and in the greater nation and world. Another teaching that goes along with that in our Christian scriptures is how we are part of being able to work toward the common good of all. And so in those teachings, there is a sense about being able to put back or secondary what we might think is our individual rights to be able to look out for the rights and the needs of others who are around us.
Thank you. Pastor Barker.
Thanks, Len. Well, I want us today to think about what it means to care for the most vulnerable in our midst, which is also deeply part of our Judeo-Christian tradition. So we read about this in passages throughout the New Testament and Old Testament that remind us that we are to care for the orphan, the widow, and the foreigner, which were all groups in the ancient world that were especially vulnerable. And God oftentimes reminds God's people that care for the most vulnerable is actually the benchmark of how a society will be judged. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about, you know, taking precautions and making sure we do everything in our power to make sure COVID-19 isn't spreading, I hope we think about the vulnerable here in Kenosha. My congregation hosts a food pantry. We have 140 to 160 families that are coming through a week. And I want us to think about some of these families. So I want to lift up one family as an example of what, why this is so important, and maybe something that some of us haven't experienced. But we've got a family. It's a 60-year-old woman. She's got respiratory illness. She lives in about a 400-square-foot apartment with her adult daughter who works at Walmart. And this family doesn't have the privilege of staying at home. This daughter has to go out and work to make money to keep them in their place. They have to ride public transportation because they don't have cars. They don't have internet, so they can't shop and get food delivered at home. So this family that has some different situations than many of us, I think about my own parents. They have a big 1,500 square foot home. They get to quarantine. They haven't basically left the home in 4 months. But, you know, there's families that really are exposed. And obviously, we can't close Walmarts. Obviously, essential workers are going to have to keep working. And so we need to think about our actions in terms of how they're impacting vulnerable families like this. And this family, in different variations and details, could represent many families that come to our food pantry. And really hope each one of us will be mindful of the privilege we have if we're allowed to socially space and distance and wear masks, and really think about those who don't have this privilege.
Very important fact. Now, it's not surprising that two of you have referred to the Judeo-Christian tradition, since you're part of that tradition. But Professor Hudspeth, I can't think of a major spiritual faith and belief in on the planet that doesn't value human life and doesn't teach that we should all respect each other's human lives. I think that probably that's about as universal a tradition as one could have. Or am I wrong in that?
I'm going to be cautious in my answer in that my area of expertise is ethics, but it's largely philosophical ethics. And so I'm reluctant to speak about all beliefs internationally. But yes, in my experience, at least reading especially the Western tradition, it is even prior to the existence of the Judeo-Christian faith, right? Go back to ancient Greek. Even then, the idea of beneficence was a key element of the virtuous actor, that is looking out for the well-being of others without looking out for yourself. So I think so, absolutely. If we're going to aspire to anything being universal, it is certainly care for others seems to be included in that list.
Want to put in on that, Pastor Barker or Pastor Patterson Sumlup?
I agree with that, and maybe even push it in most of the world religions and traditions. There is some shape or form of the golden rule, which takes us at being able to look at others at least equal or in greater need than ourselves.
Now, one of the puzzling and difficult choices we have to make regards in-person worship services, and we're going to talk about a lot of practical things here as well as broader topics, and why don't we focus in on that, because that in-person worship really reflects a lot of ethical, moral choices that everyone involved has to make, from leadership to the person who sits in the pew or in the folding chair outside, whatever the case may be. Pastor Patterson Sumwalt, would you like to take the lead on that for us, please?
Yes, I'd be happy to. We've had many conversations about when we're going to go back, so to speak, to in-person or in-building worship. We've moved our worship to an online format, as well as most of our ministry at this time, and did so with great leaps and bounds. But in our conversations, we kind of take it, looking at it month by month, about when it would be as safe as possible. There's always risks to be able to gather together. There is the sense of community and isolation that people are feeling, but there is also that risk in wanting to care for persons. In our congregation, the majority of persons are in that more vulnerable population over the age of 60. And so being able to measure our care responsibly for them as well keeps us postponing it as well as others.
Now, you have a very large congregation there at First United Methodist Church. And Pastor Barker has a different situation. He has a, as I recall, it's a bit of a smaller sanctuary and not quite as large of a congregation. Are there any different issues at your location? And you also have the Grace Welcome Center and Food Pantry that operates out of the lower level of the church, which is a whole different set of factors. Maybe you'd like to talk about both of those for us, Pastor.
Thank you. Yeah, so we have a bigger building that was built in the 1960s when our church was significantly bigger than it is now. And so we're blessed with a lot of space, but we still hope to have more members at our church. So it makes it a little bit easier for us to think about how to reopen, because we've got enough pews for there to be three or four pews between each family if we were to come back and keep everybody spaced out and are thinking about things like wearing masks and hand sanitizers. And what might that look like? Obviously, with a huge emphasis on what it means to stay safe. And I'll just speak from my own personal experience. I was actually exposed to somebody that had COVID-19 two weeks ago. This is actually my first day off of home quarantine. And really grateful that that person made the decision to wear a mask and socially distance. That has really worked out well for myself. I didn't get it, thanks be to God. And several other people were exposed as well, and they didn't have any issues either. So. Boy, really important that we think about what we can do to tamper down the infectiousness of this disease. That person didn't have any symptoms, so that's a huge danger. When it comes to our pantry, we had to move outside, which is really good. That keeps us safe in terms of not spreading, you know, it's all about breath, right? That's a huge part of it. And so by having it outside, we're able to make sure there's a breeze that's coming in to keep us safe. We have people pull up, so we don't even have to risk extra contact. We load people in their trunks. We do have some people that walk up, and we make sure to socially distance as they do that as well. So, you know, we have to keep everybody safe. And we serve a community that's especially vulnerable. In Wisconsin, the Black community is almost five times more likely to die of COVID-19 than the white community. It's one of the greatest racial gaps anywhere in the country. And we have to be especially mindful that we protect our community in Uptown Brass Village that has a special vulnerability in this time.
Professor Hudspeth, you wanted to go next?
Yes, thank you. I was actually, it's a curiosity. It's a question I was hoping that the pastors might be able to help me with. I'm obviously not considered an expert in the field of worship, so I don't have the answer to this one. But I do think there is a little bit of similarity in the question of when are we going to go back to in-person classes? Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious what they might think, which is, I fully recognize that there is something special about an in-person connection, that when you're face-to-face with a human being versus this socially distanced and internet as we're doing right now, that there's maybe a little something special there. But I guess I'm curious, is there something unique about in-person worship as opposed to any other sort of in-person activity that we might have? Does that question make sense?
Absolutely.
So I'm curious what you all's answer to that one is.
Susan, would you have to go?
I'd be happy to do that. You know, we've been doing a lot of reflecting about that, of what it is that people miss the most. And of course, you know, there is that in-person kind of relationship, as you talked about, which I think is similar, you know, in a classroom, and being able to read body language and being close to people. In worship, there is this sense about our coming together to, you know, to worship God and to be part of an experience that's greater than ourselves. And the kind of support and encouragement that we receive, you know, from others who are around us that we know by name and those that we don't know by name who participate in the same words and the same songs and the same prayers of feeling uplifted and encouraged and strengthened, as well as a very healing presence for those who are around, that have happened in worship that people are not experiencing on virtual worship.
Our guest this morning on Community Matters, talking about morality, ethics, and prudence meet COVID-19, are two pastors from Kenosha, Pastor Susan Patterson Sumwalt of First United Methodist Church and Pastor Jonathan Barker of Grace Lutheran Church. Also with us is the Associate Professor of Philosophy at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, Christopher Hudspeth. Pastor Barker, anything you want to add to what Pastor Patterson Sumwalt had to say about that?
Yeah, so we absolutely miss our congregations, and I miss, you know, the hugs and the handshakes and the smiles and collective responses and singing, and it certainly is very different being online, and there's certainly things that we miss. But in our faith tradition, too, we have a strong belief that faith continues. You know, just because we are gathered digitally, that doesn't null or void the worship experience. So worshiping online is a form of worship that is equally valid as any other form of worship, and just want to celebrate that. And I think a lot of people were surprised at how this has worked. If you told me 5 months ago that many of my seniors would be subscribing to the internet and Facebook so they could watch and tune in, I would have been shocked. I didn't know, I had no idea we'd be able to pull this off, but it's been amazing to see people appreciate it and try some new things. So I'm pleasantly surprised.
And I think this is one of the transformation things we're going to have. I've aggravated committees I've been on and boards I've been on for the past decade about not using digital media enough, so that when people travel or when people have a temporary disability, as I've had a few times, or in a situation like this, that we can still conduct a meeting. People have been always so resistant, like I was from another planet. And what we've really been doing is disabling people with various kinds of challenges from participating without really a thought way, because we could have always overcome the technological challenge. But now that excuse has been removed forever, because I don't know a grandparent who isn't FaceTiming or with their grandchildren today. I also think, since you brought up the Grace Welcome Center and the food pantry, let's put in a word that if people want to really help those who are in some of the worst shape in this plague, because it is a plague, that the Grace Welcome Center, the Food Pantry, Shalom Center, Kenosha Area Family and Aging Services, Aging and Disability Resource Center, all of these organizations need financial help and loads of volunteers to help. So I really encourage our listeners to take advantage of those opportunities. The United Way has a special COVID-19 fund. I don't know all of the organizations in Racine County and in Walworth County, which our listeners are a part of, but they have many resources too, and I encourage people to take advantage of them. Let's go back to the professor. Professor Hudspeth?
Yeah, so I think, Lynn, you're absolutely right that we have removed this sort of kind of quasi-Luddite behavior that we've all had of not wanting to move into an online format, that we've really gotten rid of that possibility. But this is also exactly the feature that has sort of revealed so much of the inequity in our society, which is one of the things that this reveals is just how many people don't actually have internet access or stable internet access or a computer that they can use. I mean, when we start thinking about students, the number of students in Racine, and I also assume Kenosha counties, in the schools that didn't have a computer at home or didn't have internet access at home and have been absolutely lost to the educational system over the past 4 months because there just have been no contact there, I think you're absolutely right. We've lost that sort of barrier to moving into online, but it's also shown just how many places not everyone has the ability to bridge that technological gap. And so it's one of those issues that I think really we do need to focus on at this point.
Now, I'm 76 years old in a few weeks. I'm in pretty darn good shape, other than the fact that I'm very susceptible to respiratory diseases. And pastors, I get angry. I get angry that I can't go outside without people feeling, if I wear a mask, the right to breathe on me or cough at me or spit at my feet. And that hasn't happened to me personally, but it's happened to friends of ours that we've read their accounts online. These things are happening, and Illinois is still sort of masked and distance up. And I could go to Illinois in Lake County and shop, and everyone is being respectful. They're wearing masks. They're keeping apart. In Kenosha, I feel like I'm in the Wild West. Everybody is just so independent. And I just get angry. What's wrong with me?
Len, I would say nothing's wrong with you because, man, we need to find this respect. And, I actually had somebody swear at me while I was in line at the grocery store a couple weeks ago. I was waiting to get in, had my mask on, and when they saw that me and several others had masks on, they started swearing at us. It was surreal to me. I really don't know why people have turned this thing into such an issue when this is about, caring for each other and each other's well-being and, caring for, those who have respiratory illness. I have asthma and a history of respiratory illness myself. Really, truth be told, can't figure out why this has become such a big deal and what type of statement people are trying to make by not wearing a mask and not keeping us safe. And as we've mentioned around this, our faith tradition and the ethics around that, the ethics are about care for others. And, I know a mask is a little hot, it's a little sweaty, it's not great to breathe the air in over and over again. And to be honest, it's a pretty small sacrifice, to be honest, to keep people safe and potentially keep people from dying.
What if in World War II people said, we're not going to pull down the blackout shades to protect against air raids. We have a right to keep our shades open. We want to see the stars at night. I think they're a bunch of sissies, but people can come on the program and argue with me if they want to, but they better be darn well prepared. Pastor Susan?
Well, a couple of things, an observation and maybe even some sense of response of the comparison that you just offered, Len, is one I do think we get mixed messages from our leadership about the role of masks and the care and protection for others. But as some of you know, I don't live in Kenosha, and it's been interesting to me to see the difference response to masks in the grocery stores. I was in Kenosha, stopped in one of the grocery stores to do my shopping last week, and was just dumbfounded by the high percentage of people who were not wearing masks. Where I live, it's the opposite of people wearing masks. And so I've been trying to ponder without an answer of why that's the case and why the differences.
Associate Professor of Philosophy, what's your comment? Go ahead, Christopher.
Sure. I was in Kenosha last week. I was just happened to be riding through, and I was astounded at the number of people not wearing masks. I think I saw one person wearing a mask, and no one else. And it was kind of amazing to me. Although I don't think I would ever call anybody a sissy on this one, I do think that your anger is actually justified. Righteous indignation is a classic virtue in Aristotle's ethics, that there are things you should be mad about, and if you're not, well, then you're not being the right kind of human. So yeah. I'm actually, I think your anger is somewhat justified.
I might jump in here, too, that I have heard people make a faith argument against wearing masks, and I'd love to refute that publicly if I could right now. I've heard many people say, they've seen my collar and my mask, and they said, as a pastor, you should just have faith. And I'm reminded, actually, of when Jesus was tempted by the devil to toss himself off the pinnacle of the temple, and Jesus actually doesn't do that. He doesn't demonstrate faith by risking his life. He says rather that we are not to put the Lord our God to the test. And would really just encourage Christians, especially Christians, to be mindful of that, that actually there's no value in our faith tradition of intentionally putting ourselves in risk to demonstrate faith. Obviously, sometimes we need to have faith to do things like serve our neighbors. I think of our volunteers that are faithfully serving, even though there's some risks to coming to our food pantry. You know, that's the type of faith we want to demonstrate, but we don't just put God to the test for the sake of doing it.
Now, I know that you've spoken about some really important big issues here, particularly the moral imperative to serve our neighbors. I wonder if you would each talk a little bit about that and how you see us, particularly in southeastern Wisconsin, trying to live that out. And maybe you might cheer us up with a good story or two that you've observed. Pastor Barker, would you want to kick it off briefly?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I'd love to lift up three teenagers. And two of them, they came to us from St. Mary's Lutheran Church. St. Mary's Lutheran Church had done a food drive for our pantry. And they showed up one morning early in the pandemic with all this food loaded up in their trucks and cars. And we said, you know what, we need some younger people that aren't high risk. So we had to send a lot of our volunteers who are higher risk home, because obviously we want to keep everybody safe, including our volunteers. That's important. And these two teenagers said, you know what, we'll be back this afternoon. And they've been back every Tuesday afternoon for the last, you know, 3.5 months or 4 months, however long this pandemic's been going on. And my heart's just so inspired by them. And have several other teenagers. We've actually had teenagers from Union Grove come down. We've had teenagers from Indian Trail Academy come down. It's been really amazing to see people use this time where they're not necessarily in school in the same way to serve their neighbors, and just really moved by the faith of teenagers. We've also had other folks from the community that have not been involved because of jobs. There's many people that said, we've been following you online for a long time, and now that we are working from home, we can actually come and volunteer. So really amazed at the way that people have stepped up, and there is some risk in volunteering and being out, obviously, right now, and just really moved that people are willing to do that and take that risk and step up because they care about getting food to the folks who treat our food pantry like a grocery store.
Pastor Susan, would you like to pick up the thread?
I'll be happy to, because it really ties into, I think, the food pantry and the Welcome Center at Grace Lutheran. We've had a monthly food drive, and we've supported the Salvation Army with that food drive for many, many years. But we've turned that outdoors, and every other week have been doing what we call a Love in Action food and hygiene drive. And we've collected from not only congregational members, but the community, four times the amount that we have done prior to this time. And so we've last week had shared a great number of items with a Grace Food Pantry, as well as with the Salvation Army. You know, one of the things we've done is limited the number of volunteers we have, you know, interacting with people who drive through and drop off their items. But one of the heartening stories have been the number of people who have come by and asked if they could give their stimulus checks to us to be put to use. And it hasn't been people that we've known. It has been people from the community who thought we were doing something good and it would be a good place to go and ask if it could be used, just out of the clear blue sky. And just get overwhelmed by all of those acts, you know, small and great.
That's really moving. We're talking about the moral imperative to serve here. And I might mention that we're recording this program 5 days ahead of broadcast, and we're not really paying attention to the daily news. So if we don't comment on something that's happened in the past 5 days, it's because, unfortunately, none of my guests can foresee the future. I'll try to do better on future programs. Professor Hudspeth, what's your take on our moral imperatives to serve?
So I guess my take is this, that human beings are inherently social, that it is part of our essential nature as a human being to live among and in contact with others. and that it is impossible to do that when we spend all of our energies thinking about ourselves. What it takes for us to be fully human in this, in the sense of being who we are, is to be engaged with other people. And therefore, we have to take account of those other people's wants, needs, and desires in our own. And if we don't at some point start taking those wants, hopes, desires as being within the circle of things that we consider as our own, then I guess I take it that what we're doing is failing as human beings. And so this need to serve is not some external rule that's being applied to us. It's rather something that's an outgrowth of our essential nature as a human.
On the volunteering, I would just like to put in a plug for the volunteers that we really depend on. And right now, although the COVID-19 plague is affecting people of every age group, and we have no idea what even a young person getting a mild case of this might cause in the future, you know, a lot of us got diseases when we were kids, and now in adulthood, we find suddenly we have shingles as a result. So putting that aside, though, we really need a lot of volunteers for some of the agencies that are serving in the Tri-County area and in Lake County, too, in Illinois. So those who can step up and help are really needed, because there are a lot of seniors and elderly who do need help, who have compromised systems. And you never know, right? You never know. The person next door to you might have just had cancer surgery or breast cancer surgery or be immunocompromised for so many reasons. I'm astounded by how many people that I'm interacting with digitally, as I am with you all, who have suddenly during meetings and whatnot said, you know, I'm so glad we can do this because I'm immunocompromised. People who have never would have told me otherwise, and you would not know. And it really is important, I think, to, because wearing masks may not protect you 100%, and it may not protect the other person 100%, but it vastly reduces the risk of transmission and ties into what all three of you have been talking about. So any of you who can get out and volunteer, I really urge you to do that, because you're desperately needed now. And the shopping services for the elderly and seniors are really important. There are a lot of people who just can't get out, and having everything delivered by Instacart and all these services is lovely, but I can tell you from experience, there's an upcharge on the food and there's another charge for delivery. And if you want to try to tip at least 20-22% like we try to do, that really adds up, makes your food bill jump by a large amount. And so we need those volunteer helpers for those agencies. So please, please do try to help. Now, I'd like to get into the moral imperative to seek justice. So all three of you have just touched on the moral imperative to seek justice. I wonder what your take is on that. Who'd like to go first? Pastor Jonathan Barker, you got the straw.
So I am incredibly moved by what's going on in Kenosha and really around our whole country in the aftermath of George Floyd's brutal murder. And really moved at how people, even in this time, have been willing to risk their lives, truthfully, and risk an infection by being out to seek justice for our Black, Brown, and Indigenous communities that for too long have faced oppression in many different ways, but have faced oppression around the way that the criminal justice and policing system has worked. And I think of something that Martin Luther, the founder of the Protestant Reformation and Lutheranism, wrote. But during a plague, he talked about how, some of us have callings and roles. And he talked about that sometimes we have to just keep going forward in life. And he talked about how priests needed to do that, and officials and kings and rulers. And I'm still moved and feel that call that even in the midst of coronavirus, we have to have this call to justice, to seek justice for communities that have been left behind. And so really moved by the young people. In Kenosha, we had four young people on Juneteenth organize a rally. Really impressed and just have a lot of hope for the future, watching our community come around this common mission. And really think even in the midst of coronavirus, this is an important thing to be doing.
This connects, as our frequent listeners know, to this program, to the idea of the social determinants of health and the Life Course Initiative for Healthy Families that's been revivified and is, I think, going to be doing great work on reducing the infant mortality rate and pregnancy complication rate between Black mothers and others in our communities, and we are in a very bad place on that statistic here in southeastern Wisconsin. Let me go to Professor Hudspeth. What is your take on justice at this time in plague years?
In plague years. So I'm going to quote a different Martin Luther. This one's Martin Luther the King. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Right, which is, if you live in a community that experiences any injustice, even if you are not yourself directly experiencing it, it puts your justice at risk too. What do I think about justice in these times? I have been surprised and amazed at how, during this time of coronavirus and the threat that and the danger that people are in, that people have taken this opportunity to actually stand up for justice in a way that they have not necessarily done in the past. I'm originally from the South, and it has been amazing to me to finally see people taking a real serious stand against the Confederate flag and what it stands for, and for finally, standing up and getting monuments to people who were, quite frankly, traitors to our nation taken down. And it's just has been amazing. It is not something that I would have thought would have been an outgrowth of an era when we were, more at risk, that this is the time that people would do it has just been amazing to me.
Pastor Susan, I don't think I've given you a chance to talk on this topic.
Well, I think you need a whole nother show, Len, to be able to talk about this, because I think in the beginning, when Professor Hudspeth talked about the inequities that have been broken open and the light has shone through them, to us, I believe that really has been true in so many ways, of taking a look at healthcare issues, of taking a look at criminal justice, of taking a look at poverty, of taking a look at the gaps with technology. There are so many areas that have just come to the forefront during this time that we may have in very subtle ways and overt ways pushed to the side. And so I'm really encouraged by both those who are willing to step forth and to be able to be out in front, and also encouraged by those who no longer feel like they can sit on the sidelines, recognizing, that their silence really is causing them to be complicit in continuing those inequities.
There's a lot of talk about continuing the stimulus funding from the federal government. And I wonder, from your standpoint, and I know there's students who have lost their summer jobs. It used to be when I was a kid, you could get a decent summer job and pay for your tuition at a public institution. And some old timers like me don't understand why kids can't do that anymore, but it's the economy, stupid. The state support has gone down, costs have gone up, it has to be made up somewhere. So those students who can't work this, they need help. Those families that can't feed themselves need help. What's your take from the trenches that each of you are in on that need for continued stimulus? Pastor Barker?
So we have seen so many families that have never used a pantry before come for our services, who have oftentimes tell us in tears that they've just lost a job or just had hours cut. We've had actually people that were donors before the pandemic come as guests who need services. So we just see how disruptive this has been in Kenosha, and see how many people have lost jobs and lost hours and are in desperate situations. So I would strongly hope that we continue to figure out ways as the government to offer stimulus. I think there's many ways to do that. One area I'd love to see is really intentionality around jobs and job guarantees and things like that. So it's not just a check going out one time, but we can actually get people back to work that, truth be told, we're not sure all these jobs are going to come back when we hear the stories from our folks. So, something that would actually get people back on their feet more permanently, it feels like something that would be really important in this time.
Pastor Susan.
Well, and I hope that in those stimulus checks, as you talked about college students and talking about people back to work, that there's a deeper underneath look at those who really need that kind of financial support in small businesses or in persons in our country, rather than the kind of blanket giving and rules that there have been.
Professor Hudspeth?
Yeah, I'm not an economist, so I'm going to be reluctant to say what I think would be the best way of supporting the nation in this time. But given the unemployment rates are as high as they've been since the Great Depression, even if you opened everything back up again, given that lots of people, because of various reasons, will be reluctant or afraid to go out and go places, I think clearly something has to be done, whether it be stimulus checks, whether it be guaranteed employment, whether it be, you know, some of the models that are taking place in Europe. I don't know which of those would be best, but I think, yeah, it's pretty obvious we're going to have to do something. As one of the pastors suggested, it's not clear all these jobs are coming back. And so it's going to take a while. And if we don't have each other to help each other through this, I don't know how any of us make it through this.
I was listening to a historian of plagues. Yes, there are people who do that. And on public radio, of all places. And he said that people behave badly during plagues and just don't play by the rules, even insofar as they know what they are. I wonder if you have a parting, very brief comment that you would like to make as to what you would encourage people to think about during these times. Pastor Barker?
I just encourage everybody, as you debate whether you're going to wear masks and socially distance and whether you're going to respond to contact tracers and just all the different ways we can work to be healthy and keep each other safe. I just ask that you think about our community in Uptown Brass Village and folks who are especially vulnerable who don't have that privilege, and just hope you'd really keep those folks in mind.
Pastor Susan?
I would say maybe more on an individual basis to take a deep breath. There's a lot of anxiety that is going around, which I think helps turn us inward and also, you know, causes us to, you know, to have those unkind actions toward others. But to take those breaths, to find ways to be kind to ourselves and thus to be kind to our neighbors and generous in our spirit.
Professor Hudspeth.
I think that it's possible that there will always be bad actors and free riders, but I'd hate to see us make all of our social and policy decisions based on fear of those people, rather than what we might be able to accomplish by just admitting that those people are going to be them and we need to be ourselves.
I appreciate so much our discussion. It's not an easy time to live in. We're all under stress that's just unbelievable. We're facing a future that is so uncertain. No one has the perfect answers, but the more we struggle together in sessions like this and with our friends and family and our spiritual leaders, I think the better off we will all be as we face the future in these very, very challenging times. A very special thank you to Pastors Susan Patterson Sumwalt of First United Methodist Church in Kenosha and Jonathan Barker of Grace Lutheran Church in Kenosha, and to Christopher Hudspeth, Associate Professor of Philosophy at UW Parkside. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta, urging you to get informed and get involved in making southeastern Wisconsin a safer and a better place to thrive. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. WGTD's morning show, insightful questions put each week to the nation's top authors.
Those are great questions. It always makes for a better interview, at least for the author, when the interviewer has actually read the book.
You're such a good interviewer, my gosh.
You really made me think. You really read the book.
Yeah. No other interviewer has really gotten into that. You really brought out some really great points.
Greg Berg holds the morning show weekdays after the 8 o'clock news, only on WGTD.
A special notice from WGTD. The United Way of Kenosha County's COVID-19 Response Fund has been established to provide financial resources to Kenosha County 501c3s affected throughout our community. Visit KenoshaCountyUnitedWay.org to donate. Support comes from Piasecki Funeral Home, thanking everyone for staying safer at home, along with commending our doctors, nurses, EMTs, and other healthcare professionals, as well as the fire department and all law enforcement for their tireless dedication during this time. Piasecki Funeral Home.
Well, this week on WGTD's Noon Tunes, we're featuring the music of County Crossings.
Danny Boy, the pipes, the pipes.